America and the world. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Folks, this is a call-in show today, and our topic today is, isn't capitalism basically corrupt? So please call with your questions at 1-800-313-9443. Let me repeat that for you. 1-800-313-9443. Today, folks, we have an exciting show. We are very fortunate to have as our special commentator today, Dr. Art Cardin. Hello, Art.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Good. Good. I'm glad you're with us. I'm also pleased to introduce our special guest, Dr. Deidre McCluskey. Hello, Deidre. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Good.
Hi,
how
Art.
Are you today?
Hey.
I'm good.
So, folks, Deidre McCluskey is the distinguished professor of economics, history, English, and communication at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and is a significant scholar on the history of capitalism. Her book, Bourgeois Virtues, presents what the mainstream press calls the radical notions that capitalism is good for us, and markets actually improve ethics, and capitalism has actually made us better as well as richer. Now, as I also just mentioned, we are fortunate to have Dr. Art Cardin. Art is a professor of economics at Rhodes College in Memphis, Tennessee, and he is going to be our special commentator and contributor this week. Regular listeners will recall our fascinating conversations we've had with Art about the myths of capitalism's history and common objections to capitalism, which, by the way, you can listen to on our archives at radiofreemarket.com. So coming back to you, Deidre, I would like to start off by referring to a quote that you mentioned in your book, "For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" Yeah. Many people feel that capitalism deadens the soul and that in order to get ahead, we are forced to be immoral or at least less moral. So what's wrong with this idea?
Well, what's wrong with it is that we're humans. And we want to preserve our soul. And so even if we're owners of companies or local stores, or even if we're participants in the market, we act as full human beings. Now, this only comes as a surprise to people who have studied lots of economics. Because economics these days suggests that the only part of ourselves that we care about is self-interest. Mm. And that's just not true.
Well, you know, Michael Moore said in his movie, Capitalism, A Love Story, that capitalism has no ethical or moral core to it. It's all about making money. What do you say to that?
Well, he's wrong. Michael Moore himself has made lots of money through capitalism. And if you asked Michael why he sells his product instead of giving it free, he'd say that he has a higher purpose, that he wants to transform the world, and in order to do that, he has to have cameras and so on to help him transform the world. Well, that's how most people are. It's true that there are some people who are driven only by greed, but greed isn't what makes capitalism work. Greed is a sin.
Well, you know, I think it would help us if we start off by recognizing that we're operating from the premise that capitalism actually rewards profits but punishes losses. And that's not what was being presented by Mr. Moore. We're going to come back to this topic right after the break. Folks, stay with us. This is Radio Free Market. I'm your host, Michael McKay. We're talking with Dr. Deidre McCluskey. So please stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back, folks. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and we are talking today with Dr. Deidre McCluskey and Art Cardin, who has studied Deidre and her works rather extensively during our brief break here. Art, you brought out a couple of questions that you'd like to pose over to Deidre. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would love to. So we mentioned Michael Moore earlier. One of his forerunners, I guess, was Phil Donahue. There's a famous YouTube clip of Phil Donahue asking a couple of questions of one of Deidre's former colleagues, Milton Friedman. And here I paraphrase Donahue. He says, when you see around the globe the maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed is a good idea to run on?
Well, greed is a terrible idea to run on. It's an awful way of living. Greed is prudence without other virtues, without the balance of love or justice. And in Christian terms, it's a sin. But capitalism actually works when you head right down to it on prudence along with the other virtues. Without this balance of the virtues, capitalism or socialism or anything in between works extremely poorly.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting concept that, you know, this fundamental idea of capitalism being equated to prudence.
Yeah. Well, you can think of economics, which is the central theory of capitalism, as being the theory of prudence only, prudence by itself. You know, suppose we have a bunch of people who are acting like rats, how will things turn out? And my objection to my own field that I've slowly come to is exactly as I said, that we're humans and we in fact actually work and should work with all the virtues in play.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned in your book that over the last 200 years we've really experienced a triple revolution of politics, population, and prosperity, and that we really have the potential for more of life itself.
Yes.
You know, I found it very fascinating that you talk about both this internal and external improvement through capitalism. Could you expand on this a little bit?
Yeah, there's an easy point which economists often make, which is that if you're a seller in a market and you have a store or something, you have to maintain an ethical a pattern of behavior or you won't keep your customers. But I think there's a more profound effect that participation in the market economy has. You start with this external incentive to behave well, but people can't go along pretending to be good all the time. If they pretend hard enough, they actually become good. So there's an actual internal change, I think, in how people are. And it's a sad fact that under Soviet communism, people ended up behaving worse than they had under markets.
Mm-hmm. So this expansion of virtue is not automatic. You know, compromising one's morality, you know, can occur, but
yeah,
that's not the fault of engaging in commercial activity per se.
No. In fact, in an odd way, it's the fault of the economists themselves. As I said before, there's an awful lot of talk in economics that amounts to saying that greed is good. And I think it's wrong as economics, and it's certainly wrong as an understanding of society. And above all, it's bad for people. It's bad for people to be told all the time that all that matters is the bottom line. That's in fact what's happened in graduate schools of business over the last 30 years or so. And it's been very bad for the kids.
Mm-hmm. So, in your opinion, there's always going to be room for the ethics business, you know?
Yeah, for preaching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, preaching has a bad reputation, but after all, that's what your mom did.
Sure.
That's why you're a good person, because she preached at you, and she set a good example.
Yeah, good manners have to be learned.
Yep, they sure do.
Yeah, and so let's talk about this from the other perspective. That you say that capitalism gives us greater scope and dimension in our lives. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, by scope, I don't mean mouthwash. I mean that the range of things we can do, the kinds of careers we can have, the things we can do in our lives, are tremendously expanded by the enrichment that comes from an ethical capitalism.
You know, one of the things that I found very interesting in both studying your work, Art, as well as yours, Deidre, is your historical perspective, because most people are not aware of just how limited our lives really were. And I know that you have, you're quite an expert, Deidre, in the history of agricultural socialist communities in England. Now, were they more ethical communities, or did they have higher crime?
Although we often think of the medieval peasants, sort of Monty Python style, as being socialists. In fact, they were capitalists, but they were very poor. $3 a day, or $1 a day in modern terms, whereas the average American spends about $120 a day now, in real terms, in terms of goods and services. So if you're that poor, you know, I'm not sure I would have time to be ethical if I were that poor.
But didn't you find that in one of your researches, that the poorest slums that were more operating in a more or less capitalist way were actually, they had less crime than in the so-called socialist agricultural communities?
Yes, there's this old shocking finding by a student of these matters named Barbara Hannawolf, that crime in the presumably collectivist medieval villages was much higher than in the poorest areas of the United States now. But on the other hand, people have always been more or less market-oriented. It's that in the last couple of centuries, they've allowed the market to work.
Mm-hmm. And give us some numbers. I know that in your book you really, without going into great detail, I know that you mentioned this concept that the average person today has 8.5 times more actual food, clothing, you know, housing, education, travel, books, etc. So the average person has that expanded, not to mention their lifespan and health and quality of life.
Yeah, and by the average person in the world, I mean all of the very poor people included.
Well, wasn't the average person poor?
The average person was extremely poor in 1800. Your ancestors, Art's ancestors, mine, any of the call-inners, ancestors, we all earned about the same amount the ancestors earned, as I said, about $3 a day. Imagine trying to get along on $3 a day. You could buy a couple of cups of coffee if you didn't add the cream.
And yet, capitalism is vilified by, you know, Marxists, the socialists. They say that, that capitalism actually makes things worse. Makes us worse people and actually poorer. But this is fundamentally not true.
Yeah, it certainly is false. And there's just example after example. A country like, South Korea, which adopted capitalism, is by now very prosperous with, as you say, a long expectancy of life, whereas just across the border, the North Koreans are actually starving. East Germany and West Germany was another experiment of this sort. So it's plain that when we allow people to operate reasonably freely in markets, and when we admire them, when we think highly of entrepreneurship as we do in the United States, we get very good results.
Well, this is a fascinating phrase you just used, when we admire them. I want to come back to that right after the break.
Sure.
We're talking with Dieter McCluskey. This is Michael McKay with Radio Free Market with our special commentator, Art Carton. We're going to take a brief break. Folks, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Talk to you in just a minute. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. I'm turning the microphone over to you, Art. Go ahead. We're talking with Dieter McCluskey. Go ahead, Art.
Okay, so in the last segment, we talked about admiring capitalists. And in the last few years, I've done a lot of research on Walmart. And I'm wondering, should we admire Sam Walton? Is Sam Walton an admirable person?
Oh, sure. I mean, you've done very good work on this. And what's interesting is that most economists who study Walmart, more or less regardless of their politics, come to the conclusion that he was an admirable guy. And he was an admirable guy both because he was prudent, which means, in his case, that he invented a whole new way of operating a store, a way that was so much more efficient in terms of inventory and scale, that the average price of the stuff that poor people buy in Walmart has fallen by about a third. But he was also an ethical person. You know, that's pretty common. You'll find that John D. Rockefeller, who people nowadays think, boy, he must have been awful. He was not. He was a devout Baptist. He gave away large parts of his income from the time he was young. The same is true of Andrew Carnegie. So I'm all for Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that raises an interesting question. It's easy to say that about an iconic figure like, you know, Sam Walton or Rockefeller, who, if I remember correctly, I think Rockefeller founded your former employer, the University of Chicago.
He did.
Yes. So it's true that perhaps they did some great things, but how is society better off if I hold the guy who manages my local Kroger in high esteem, or if I hold the people who seem to do nothing more than just kind of stock shelves on a regular basis? Or
if they stock shelves in an intelligent way, they're trying to stock the shelves to make them as convenient as possible for you. Now, of course, people will say, oh, no, they're simply trying to sell a product. But the very fact that you buy the stuff suggests that you value it. The underlying point, of course, is that capitalism is an extremely altruistic way of organizing a society, because all these people are running around trying to make things and provide services for you that you're prepared to buy with your hard-earned income. Whereas, under state socialism, it's not you who decides what to buy. It's someone in Washington or Moscow.
So this concept, I want to jump in here, this concept of being prudent, which, is absolutely a part of capitalism,
yeah.
We could say, yes, prudence is good, but not
to
the expense of other virtues.
Absolutely. I mean, we all want everyone around us, our dogs, our kids, ourselves, to be prudent in the sense that we have know-how of that we look both ways and on crossing the street, that we know how to show up on time for our employment. But if that's all we do, we're a machine. We've made ourselves into a maximizing machine. There has to be some point to it all. There has to be hope and faith and love and to operate as any kind of social person, we have to have courage and justice and temperance as well.
You mentioned in your writings that the pre-industrial people were more machine-like.
Yeah, they had to be.
Yeah, and so
they had to turn themselves into threshing machines or turn themselves into plowing machines, whereas in modern life, there's much more scope. Now, of course, we all have to sometimes act in a machine-like way. When I'm adding up a column of figures for my income tax, as alas I'm starting to do, I have to, so to speak, make myself into an adding machine, or I have to go buy an adding machine. But in any case, of course we have to act like machines sometimes. I act like a typing machine, but we have much more scope in modern life for not acting in a mechanical way.
Well, I think what you're really referring to there by machine-like is that we are basically just involved with the drudgery of life.
That's right.
Yeah, and so I'd like to come back to this topic right after the break. Folks, we're going to take a brief break. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and we're talking with Dr. Deidre McCluskey and Dr. Art Cardin, and we're going to come back in just a minute, so please stay with us. Be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is Michael McKay at Radio Free Market. I'm speaking with Dr. Deidre McCluskey and Dr. Art Cardin, and we were just talking about how the pre-industrial people, prior to the advent of Western capitalism as we know it today, really lived in a more machine-like kind of way that equated with a lot more drudgery. You know, Deidre, would you tell us some more stories about that?
Well, for example, after the harvest of grain, there was the matter of threshing the grain, which we don't even think about now. It happens automatically as the grain is harvested, and that was getting the grains separated from the straw and the chaff. And it was backbreaking. The word flail means an instrument for threshing, and people would spend weeks flailing away at this grain to break off the waste products in order to get down to the stuff that you could make into bread. So hundreds and thousands of such innovations. And that's what's made us go from $3 a day for the average person to $30 a day in real terms now, in terms of stuff you can buy over the last couple hundred years. And in the countries like the United States or France that have gone all the way, it's up at $120 a day.
So leisure has suddenly become an option.
Yeah,
and
it has.
Healthiness has become an option.
Well, sure. We speak about how hard we work, how many hours we work, but it's a lot smaller than the amount that our grandparents worked. And then we retire, and we live a long life after that.
Right.
Expectancies of life have enormously expanded. Now, we can spend all that time watching reality TV, right? Or we can do worthwhile things like hearing radio-free market. We have the choice of improving ourselves, of having a full life. And as we were saying before, our ancestors didn't have the choice.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that the United States has more golf courses than any other place in the world.
Well, it also has more opera houses. It has more orchestras. It has more. It has many, many more colleges. So, you know, we can spend our life drinking Coca-Cola and watching television, but a lot of us have learned to go beyond that.
And actually, one of the things that fascinates me most is that most Americans are not aware that the entire notion of a childhood as this kind of sacrosanct time of life of play and discovery and so on is a very new concept.
Yes, it was ordinary, routine, expected, and in many parts of the world it still is, that children should work.
Mm-hmm.
And one thinks that that was stopped by laws in the 19th century or in the early 20th century. The old joke is, the golf links lie so near the mill that almost every day the working children can look out and see the men at play. But that wasn't, that ended not because of laws, but because of enrichment. As you can see in the small number of children that people have, they have a small number of children so that they can afford to educate the children that they have. They have, as my colleagues in economics put it, higher quality kids.
That's interesting. So, Art, please go ahead. I know that you had another point you wanted to make here.
These are points I make to my students periodically. I say to them, whenever you're mad at your parents, realize that the reason they have you, the reason you're here, is because they wanted to have you around.
Absolutely.
You know, not because you were a strong back to help with the plowing, but because they enjoyed you.
Yes.
I'd like you to elaborate a little bit on kind of precisely these points. And there's a certain irony, I think, in enjoying the fruits that capitalism has produced, you know, comfortable climate-controlled buildings in which we can sit and criticize capitalism. or for example, the person who, without irony, will sit at Starbucks, sip a latte, and use their Macintosh to blog about how alienated and demoralized they feel by the capitalist system.
Yes, that's an old danger. I had a friend when I was in graduate school who was very rich, but he was a Marxist, and he would go off to his... He would go off to his meetings to overthrow the government in his Mercedes, and we shared an office, he and I, and we would frequently have to leave messages for John to call his broker after he got home from the anti-capitalist meeting. Yeah, there's a, and it's more than just it's more than just hypocrisy. It's one of the big dangers. It's called there's a name for it. It's called the cultural contradictions of capitalism.
Right.
That the very people who benefit most from modern economic growth and capitalism grow up to be its critics.
Right. Yeah. I was wondering if you could comment too. I mentioned earlier that, or during one of the breaks, one of my favorite quotes from Bourgeois Virtues says that a churning mass of impoverished juveniles makes for easy tyranny.
Yes.
So, again, I've told people before that no communist country ever built a shopping mall, and no capitalist system, no free market ever built a death camp.
Yes.
Or Gulag Archipelago. I was wondering if you could comment further on that.
Yes, that's certainly true. That there's if you're poor and you die young, then the country is going to consist of young, impoverished folk. And young, impoverished folk are not happy. They are not going to be they're not going to be helpful to each other. They're going to be danger to each other. I wouldn't entirely agree with your generalization, because there are parts of free capitalist countries that behave as though they were socialism.
Oh,
so we have this enormous number of people in prison in the United States because of the drug laws.
Right.
And that's, so to speak, our experiment with socialist gulags.
Yeah. You mentioned, Deidre, that Marxists, they claim rather falsely that my free choice to engage in capitalism actually enslaves others,
yeah,
which they call involuntary exchange. Could you,
yeah,
you know, I see numerous problems with this idea, but please comment on it.
Well, I see all kinds of problems with this idea. I've always had lots of Marxist friends. I myself, when I was a kid, was a Marxist. So I kind of understand where they're coming from. They have this, they're making the perfect the enemy of the good. In a perfect world, we wouldn't have to work at all. We would be able to read onion-skinned Greek editions of the Gospels and paint and explore our guitar playing. But, of course, we have to work in a world of scarcity, although, as you said before, a lot less than we once did. And in choosing what to do, how to work, the market system suggests gently to us that if we want to work as a chartered public accountant, we're probably going to make more than if we work as an abstract artist. But that's, you know, then we're free to choose, as Milton and Rose,
sure,
Friedman.
Yeah, so we're free to suffer due to unemployment, but that's not imposed by any employer.
Yeah, you know? And it's not exactly unemployment that's the compulsion that irritates the Marxists. It's that you have to choose market jobs sometimes. If you're rich, that's fine. You don't have to, and that annoys people. But it's not compulsion. The old left-wing complaint is that the poor are free. They're free to sleep under the bridges. But in fact, when they are free to choose jobs and to move from job to job, the very poor, the long-run result is that they and their children and their grandchildren become rich.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I said before, the ancestors of everyone who can hear this program were unspeakably poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad actually went back to Ireland back in the early 1970s to visit with some relatives and actually look up some relatives there, and he was very surprised to find that some of them still had dirt floors.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, and by the way, all that has radically changed in Ireland.
Right.
In 2002, Ireland had the second highest per capita income in the world. It has this very high income now because it adopted free market policies.
So, Art, did you have another point that you want to bring out right there?
No, nothing on that.
Okay.
As such.
Well, I'd like to ask you, Deidre, to talk a little bit more about this concept of risk, uncertainty, and effort. You know, life entails these things.
Sure.
And we have only a couple of choices on how to face that. You know, we can either take the responsibility of dealing with it ourselves, or we can try to engage some kind of forced privilege from someone else.
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Well, we can either ensure with our own resources, or we can claim we can claim other people's resources when things go bad. I'm in favor of a certain amount of what you might call social in insurance, but on the other hand, there's always the danger that will corrupt people.
Mm-hmm. And so
that it'll make them into children, in effect.
So, the concept that you say in one of your books, when people have a choice, they choose a capitalist life, a life of free choice.
Yes.
And what I was driving at when we were talking about the Marxist claim about involuntary exchange that enslaves others, I have numerous problems. One is the term slave, because in capitalism there is no coercive force restraining or imposing or forcing that other person.
Over the Christmas vacation, I was at my mom's house, and we were playing lots of Scrabble, and we were using the shorter Oxford Dictionary, and I came across the definition of wage slave,
mm-hmm.
and startlingly, the definition of wage slave there is anyone who works for pay, and I think that's a terrible corruption of the word slave. Being a slave, as you imply, is a very serious matter of being actually compelled to work for someone else. I mean, compelled with physical force.
Mm-hmm.
And to compare that with, that with the fact that I'm compelled to show up for my classes is to be very unkind to people who are actually enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
There are, as you know, there are still actual slaves in the world, although there are the smallest number of slaves as a percentage of the world population than there ever has been in history.
Uh-huh.
And we shouldn't use words in this cheapening way.
Excellent points here. So, folks, we're going to come back right after the break, and we're going to talk a little bit more in our final segment with Dr. Deidre McCluskey and Dr. Art Carden, and about ethics and capitalism. This is Michael McKay. You're listening to Radio Free Market. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay, and we're in our last segment now with Dr. Deidre McCluskey and Dr. Art Carden, and we've been talking about capitalism and ethics and how capitalism actually makes us better people, or I should maybe better say, gives us the opportunity to be better people.
Yeah.
And that is largely because of the expansion of choice that we have in our lives. Art, could you bring this out a little bit more?
I'd like to begin with a quote and an example. William Wordsworth once said, "In getting and spending, we lay waste our powers."
Yes.
Sort of his critique of the accumulation of stuff. Last weekend, or a couple of weeks ago, it occurred to me as my wife and I were playing Yahtzee while our Roomba cleaned one of the rooms in our house. And this seems. It hit me like a ton of bricks that it's only because of creative destruction and the economic growth that capitalism brings that we're able to do this. So I was wondering if you could comment some on the choices that capitalism allows and then also the incremental process by which we're made better off.
Well, the choices are astonishing, and they annoy some intellectuals. So some people are very irritated that there are so many kinds of cereal in the grocery store.
Right.
But as the anthropologists say, we create ourselves in the things we buy. Now, of course, one can be a very shallow person and think that buying a fancy car is what makes you the person you are, but at all levels of society, from our ancient ancestors, the hunter gatherers, to the present, we've painted ourselves, so to speak, with the objects that we make and buy. And what's been extraordinary about the last couple of centuries is that incremental process that you speak of inventing new things, of inventing new kinds of electronic devices and new kinds of shoes and new kinds of colleges and new kinds of new music. There's a sort of a craziness about modern capitalism, but it's a happy craziness on the whole. It doesn't help everyone, because Charlie Parker invents a new kind of jazz, and the old kind of jazz person is made less wealthy. Einstein invents a new kind of way of looking at the universe, and the old ways, the people with the old ways are hurt. But for everyone else, it's a tremendous improvement.
So, basically, what we've been seeing here is this discussion about capitalism is more about the narrow horizons that we had in the past, and the vastly expanded horizons that we have now, and that it is a messy process. It isn't something that has no consequences. There's no nirvana. There is a good and bad, but the immediacy of knowledge, the immediacy of mobility, the abundance of life's needs, and the reliability of our survival is so vastly expanded because of capitalism.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, folks. This is the end of our show. I wish we could go longer. This is Radio Free Market, and I'm your host, Michael McKay, and we've been talking to Dr. Dieter McCluskey and Dr. Art Carton, and please listen to us next week. You can find us also on the web at radiofreemarket.com. Until then, we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you very much.